Definitely. I think Andy will be moving up to the table. But your EBFM documents are behind tab 2 in your folder on your CD. I'll make a few brief comments about the committee's work and charge, and then hand it over to Andy, who has a presentation on some of the information that we received as a committee and some of our next steps. As it says, we don't require any council action, so our intent here is to try to bring the council up to speed on the discussions that are just starting at the committee level. So as we all know, this was our first EBFM committee meeting after a significant delay. The council and our first after the council identified pursuing EBFM and that transition as one of our long-term priorities. So I think I can speak for the entire committee and many associated with this that, you know, I think there's a lot of excitement about restarting this process and about pursuing this transition. We do have, and we're fully aware as a committee, a pretty unique charge that's going to require us to take a bit of a step back and a slightly different approach to our work. And I think that sort of starts in terms of the transition to EBFM by first defining some of the terms and coming to a shared recognition or a shared understanding of some of the terms regarding EBFM, and then figuring out how to proceed in a thoughtful and considered way, ultimately arriving at some goals and objectives and a pathway to get there. This meeting, I don't think it'll come as any surprise, didn't accomplish all of that. We don't have the EBFM plan in hand. It's going to be a process. So I think this meeting was, the committee meeting was a good first step. Part of our work and where we decided to start after some conversations with the chairman and our executive director, among others, was to try to learn as much as we could as a committee and ultimately inform the council to the extent that we can about how the EBFM is being handled in other regions, what approaches they've taken, how they've incorporated public input, you know, whether they've taken a regulatory or non-regulatory approach, those types of things, and try wherever possible to duplicate the success and avoid some of the mistakes that others have encountered. We began our meeting reminding ourselves to have patience with this process. It is a long-term priority, and I think unlike some of our other management actions, which are more crisis-oriented, this kind of transition allows us the opportunity to really bring ourselves up to speed and make informed decisions about how we want to move forward. We got at this committee meeting a range of really valuable presentations. I wanted to thank Andy for all his hard work in putting the documents together and the presentations from various regions about what everybody else has done in this sphere. We also got some presentations on both science and policy at the NOAA headquarters level that I thought were really good in terms of providing a context. Andy's going to provide an overview for all of that, and then maybe after that, Chairman Robbins from the MID could update us on some of the decisions they've made and some of the midterm timelines they have with regards to EBFM in the MID. With that, I'll turn it over to Andy.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. I'm going to provide just a very brief overview of the presentations made at the meeting. There are a lot of documents available on our EBFM webpage, including all the presentations in detail. There's a meeting summary which describes some of the discussion related to all of the presentations. And then there's a series of guidance documents that have been useful throughout the years. It's also available on the EBFM page through that specific meeting site or page. The first thing the committee had was a set of presentations that provided a national overview and also a brief discussion of the SSC meeting. The first presentation was done by Karen Abrams, who works with Galen Trumbull in the Domestic Fisheries Division, and secondly by Dr. Link, who many of you know, who accepted a new position as Senior Scientist for Ecosystems a couple of years ago. And then Dr. Kreitzer, as the SSC chair, provided that overview from the SSC reports and the white papers. So just as an overview from a national perspective, background, authority, and support, the council definitely has authority to develop FEPs, or fishery ecosystem plans, to provide guidance to fishery regulations promulgated in FMPs. And as such, there's no formal NEPA process because there's no regulations assigned to them. And at the present time, there's no secretarial approval currently required, although there is a provision in the Senate draft to do just that. The mandatory Magnuson Act provisions related to ecosystem-based management include specification of optimum yield, considering the needs of fishing communities, National Standard 8, bycatch minimization in National Standard 9, and the essential fish habitat provisions in the Magnuson Act, specifically in Sections 303A and 303B. And then furthermore, the Fishery Service is encouraging councils to develop fishery ecosystem plans, and those plans also help the council fulfill the requirements of NEPA, in particular cumulative impacts. In this particular region, there's a pretty strong science in support of EBFM, spearheaded by Dr. Fogarty. Include in this page, which is also provide this link through our EBFM page, and you can reach it directly through the Science Center web pages as well. Ecosystem assessment reports, a whole series of considerations and aspects, climate change, spatial tools for EBFM. There's some more general brochures and booklets available. And finally, in terms of science, there's continual development of general surplus production models and multi-species models. They're either available or under continual development, both here in the U.S. and worldwide. There's also an effort more recently by the Lenfest Fishery Ecosystem Task Force that was touched on briefly during the meeting, they are actually in the process of developing an advisory panel. I understand that they're going to be reaching out to councils to provide some membership to that advisory panel. There are four specific guidance documents that were outlined at the committee meeting that provides some advice and input and guidance to developing fishery ecosystem plans, beginning with the 1987 Program Development Plan for Ecosystem Monitoring Fisheries Management, a 1999 Ecosystem Principles Advisory Panel Report, a 2005 paper on developing regional marine ecosystem approaches to management by Mark Holliday and Gautam, I don't know that person, and then a NOAA training course on ecosystem approaches to fisheries management. All four of those are available through our website as well as other locations. Then we skip down to the regional applications, and preparing for the meeting, I either hooked some people into providing some presentations at the meeting or providing me with some overview of what they've done. I didn't focus on the Mid-Atlantic Council because we're working hand-in-hand with the Mid-Atlantic Council on EBFM, we think. And so the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council, they focus on data and science development supporting the coral FMP. It's ecosystem planning, but focusing on those elements. Similarly, I'll skip to the Gulf States Marine Fisheries Commission on the next page. They're promoting multi-species assessment that include trophic relationships, but at the present time, there's no formal FEP development. The Western Pacific Council has more of a spatially-oriented FEP around the island groups, and similarly, the Caribbean Fishery Management Council is proposing a revision of their ABC specifications by location rather than species by species or species group. But more interestingly to our discussion, I think the North Pacific Fishery Management Council had developed an Aleutian Islands fishery ecosystem plan to address special circumstances in that location. It's more rather than a standalone ecosystem plan, but rather an overlay to their fishery management plans. There are no initiatives in it, but provide some guidance. They're considering expanding the scope of their FEP planning with a new Bering Sea FEP, which is beginning. They're beginning development of it. They had more of a scoping meeting, actually, at their last council meeting in Nome in June. The discussion was on in June 4th. And that plan may have some additional ecosystem initiatives similar to the Pacific Fishery Management Council and the Western Pacific Management Council. But unfortunately, they were Diana Evans, who spearheaded the Aleutian Islands plan, and they were preparing for the June council meeting. They could not actually participate during our EBFM committee meeting. Mike Berner from the Pacific Fishery Management Council participated remotely, as some others from the region, from the headquarters, and gave a presentation on their FEP development, which is at least completed and perhaps under revision at some time. But they initially developed the FEP in response to roadblocks for creating conservation zones and to protect their forage-based species and species that were not part of their fishery plans. There are four components to their plan, requiring an ecosystem status report. There's some ecosystem initiatives, FMP support, and ecosystem considerations and stock assessments. I also looked a little further afield to other countries. What I found was Australia develops a ecosystem or ecological risk assessment that applies to the regional and fishery FMPs, an area that we might want to hear from more. Canada has a deputy director for ecosystem planning, and they have guidance documents for individual fishery management plans. I didn't go into any detail at this meeting, but again, some of the international perspective might be helpful. Iceland has a series of networks of fishery area closures. Broadly speaking, you can consider that to be a type of ecosystem planning. And during the meeting, Dr. Sissonwine mentioned that there are some areas in terms of the Southern Ocean and the Arctic fishery management planning that incorporates ecosystem principles that we might want to look at. In terms of what we do, in terms of background baseline, at least a nominal level is evaluation of ecosystem effects and existing plans, cumulative effects and non-fishing impacts on the fishery. We have management measures that have ecosystem impacts, gear regulations, closed area, limited access, and effort limits in terms of gear restrictions and, in some plans, days at sea or effort limits. We have measures to protect and enhance essential fish habitat. We have the new habitat amendment, which is going to public hearing soon. And finally, some general bycatch management. We began an effort on EBFM in 2012. I was involved in that, developing a EBFM plan development team was formed. We held three meetings. We began the effort to develop a scoping document identifying EBFM goals and objectives, and we were looking at a more holistic approach to EBFM, more of a revolutionary process rather than an evolutionary process. During those meetings, we developed some focus on important issues for policy development, including organizational structure and jurisdictional kind of a governance issue, frankly somewhat more related to climate change, I guess. That discussion is going on in the Mid-Atlantic. Allocation mechanisms within ecosystem production units and between jurisdictions, if we went through the approach of an evolutionary approach. Scales of ecosystem production units, redefining optimum yield, integration with rebuilding requirements, how do you do that across the different ecosystem units that one species may bridge, and how handling differing economic and social values. So we did have a lot of answers to these. We had a lot of questions to enter a dialogue with the committee. We were going to engage the Council and Oversight Committee, and about that time the Council decided to refocus efforts on groundfish management in the habitat plan. We still have a pretty diverse and, I think, good group on the EBFM PDT, which is up here on the screen. At the time, it included Dr. Link, but due to his new duties, he can no longer participate in our regional plan development team. It was brought up during the meeting that perhaps there were some others that we should look into as possible membership on the plan development team, and we'll follow up on that as soon as possible. Kind of coming out of the meeting or during the meeting preparation of the meeting, kind of focused on two different approaches, kind of a revolutionary approach that we started before where ecosystem production units could be defined in spatial scale that would implement approved regulation, so it would require approval by the Secretary of Commerce, require scoping under NEPA, and so on. A full-fledged, if you will, fishery ecosystem plan. Another approach that many have used in other regions and perhaps would be considered here is develop some sort of EBFM guidance document building on an evolutionary approach to address specific issues and circumstances by area. We might have informal scoping and public input, but not a formal round of public hearings with a draft document, although that kind of model could be followed in some sort of form. At the present, it would not require agency approval, but that may change depending upon the reauthorization of the Magnuson Act. Some of that's now would be required, at least under the Senate version of the Act. The FMPs would implement strategies under this, and it might have some benefit in actually not being so constrained by the Act and may point out where national standards need a bit more flexibility to achieve something that makes scientific sense, but it's not currently practicable under the current Act. So that's all I have, and I'll take some questions if any are needed. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation, Andy. Are there questions? David.
Yeah, Andy, I think you said that Dr. Link would be unavailable now because of his new responsibility. I can understand that, but he is the top dog, so to speak, now on ecosystem-based fisheries management, and I would think that we could still draw upon his expertise and get him involved in discussions as opposed to waiting until that we get close to the finish line and then he weighs in. Can you give us your views as to how we can continue to take advantage of all of his knowledge?
Yeah, Dr. Link actually said he would be available for consultation or informal participation on meetings that we have, whether they're at the scientific level that PDT would consider or a policy level at the committee. So just keeping him in the loop would be the best way to do that.
Tom.
Just to follow that up and then maybe with a few comments, both Dr. Link, or I should say Dr. Link and almost every presenter that or person that's we've asked to contribute has been incredibly generous with their time, and almost to an individual, they've all committed as much as they can to informing our efforts moving forward. So Dr. Link, and then also some of the sort of policy leads in other councils, I think have been really generous in helping us understand what they did and what they learned from it. I think as Andy's presentation shows, there is a pretty significant range of how different regions have approached this. We probably don't have a truly revolutionary approach in front of us to sort of draw from that's actually been implemented, but we have a sort of a number of flavors of evolutionary approaches and some decisions and some lessons in each of them. Each of them has a different focus, different goals and objectives, different process, and each of them carries a different regulatory sort of guidance significance, I should say. And I think we're not at the point necessarily where I think we've learned enough to say we like that, we don't like that, we should do this or we shouldn't. I think we're still in the sort of information gathering phase, and I think that's appropriate. This is going to take some time to work through. What we didn't get to in Andy's presentation, what is in the committee-level report, are some of the short-term things that we're going to be working on. We are moving forward in reviewing PDT membership. We're looking at ways to seek advisory input and how we would structure that to include get the most out of that input and what the composition would look like. The committee discussed that, and we'll be moving forward with that. We've talked about two perhaps discrete short-term initiatives that would be on the sort of evolutionary spectrum. That would include perhaps a straw man model for ecological indicators, sort of a fact sheet along the lines of what's been used in or what is being used in the Pacific and North Pacific that we may ultimately decide to use as a council to inform our management decisions. That's an informative document, basically a snapshot of several key parameters and what we think that means in terms of what's going on in the ocean that year. And then the second of those sort of short or midterm things that we may be looking at or that the committee discussed was whether we'd want to pursue some standardized terms of reference that got to ecological factors in all of our stock assessments, so that all of our stock assessments going forward would have standardized terms of reference that ask them to consider some of these relationships. All those are still to be developed, but those were some of the concepts that came out of the committee. Andy is going to be scheduling our follow-up committee meeting, and we'll be circulating the agenda for that. It looks like it will be sometime late in July. With that, I had spoken with Chairman Robbins from the MID a little bit about what those guys are doing over the course of the summer, and it looks like there's some things moving. So maybe we could get an update from the chairman if he's able, because I think some of us will want to plug into that.
Before we go to Rick, Matt's hand was up, and you started to answer some of the questions I had about what your next steps are going to be, but I guess before we conclude this discussion, is there anything, any advice or comments that you're seeking from the council today? Tom.
Andy may have something else to weigh in on. I think, we finished our conversation at the committee level with a discussion as to, what we were looking from the council what we were looking for from the council today. And I think a lot of it was just informing the council of the steps we plan to take, you know, the discussion at our first meeting. I don't think there's any specific action. I do think we'll be in touch with the full council as to our plans for, you know, advisors and the agenda for the next meeting.
Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This might be a question for Andy. You referenced a 2012 scoping document. Is that on the website at the EBFM page?
We did not even put pen to paper on a scoping document at that time. We were discussing what was going to be in it and how to go about it. So there is no scoping document.
A lot has changed in the last 3 or 4 years. And while we're in the information gathering stage, you know, there's going to be a lot of interests involved in this process. And I think it might behoove us to go out there and see what every stakeholder or what stakeholders are interested in doing, and so we can best balance the desires and needs there. It is going to be a long process, and I think given the dynamic changes that we've seen just in the recent short period, I think it's going to it would help us to do that.
Tom,
just do that. We did discuss it, and maybe Andy has an answer to that. We did discuss as a committee when it would be appropriate to go out to the public, and I think that the consensus of the committee was that we needed to take another step or two before we were even asking the right questions, and we made the most of that scoping opportunity. It may be ultimately that, you know, that we're not in a regulatory framework that requires scoping, but whether it's called scoping or is formal scoping or not, I think we all recognize the need for public input early in the process. I think the committee broadly felt that we needed a little bit more discussion before we were even at the point of asking intelligent questions that that can help move the process.
I mean, and I would add to that, I think we need to think through the terms of reference before we get too much further down the road. David.
Yeah, Tom and Andy, actually for all council members, I mentioned Jason Link before. Dr. Link, he was extensively interviewed by the American Fisheries Society recently, and his interview has been published in the journal Fisheries. Very insightful. You can really walk around inside of his head. He says everything that he needed to say about his new role with ecosystem-based fisheries management. So I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, that interview be acquired, made available to council members, since it really sets the stage and gives everyone a clear understanding how he, as a leader on this particular issue, how he's thinking and where he would like to go. And as a consequence, it's likely where we will go, too.
I'll just sidebarring with Tom about seeing if we can get that link to our web. Andy.
Yeah, with respect to scoping, we have a lot of work that has already been done that we may utilize and look to evaluate stakeholder perceptions, one of which is we had an extensive pilot project a few years ago, and all those reports are on our EBFM website in detailed and summary form, and I found them to be very informative. Furthermore, there's been some more recent work here at Cornell about stakeholder perceptions, and we might be able to get some kind of presentation in front of the committee and then decide how to go forward. It might be worthwhile to develop actually the scope of what EBFM, what we intend on doing, and where the topics to be addressed or proposed to be addressed anyway, given some focus to any kind of scoping that we do going forward.
Matt.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. That's great. Thank you. I appreciate that. And again, just updating, I've looked at the white papers and some of the work that was done a few years ago, just getting those perceptions and desires up, you know, updating those things to consider the work that's been done since then. That was my concern. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mike, and then we're going to get a report from the MID.
Okay, thank you very much. As a member of the committee, I really enjoyed the first meeting. I thought it was very very positive, a lot of spirit of people who want to pursue this and want to do it right. But it is clear, let me back up a second. As Tom said, I think it would be premature for this council to weigh in on any aspect of it at this stage, since it's very early in the discussion. But it is clear already to me that at some point the council will have to make some big decisions in terms of direction. Obviously, there is already an evolutionary process ongoing of implementing an ecosystem approach. The things we do on habitat is part of an ecosystem approach or ecosystem-based management. Increasingly, we talk about the role of climate and how it might change biological reference points, and that's addressed in some stock assessments, which is, again, part of that evolutionary process. So I think that's ongoing. What you hear happening in some regions is people actually developing documents which they call fishery ecosystem plans. And my concern about those, there's nothing wrong with them, but they're basically descriptive documents, which I, in reviewing them so far, wonder about the work they generate versus the benefits that come out the other end. I see a lot of words on paper and relatively little action I can tie to them. And I have had that experience in multiple places. And so while I don't object to somebody rolling up their sleeve and preparing a fishery ecosystem plan, it might actually be a good thesis problem or something of that nature, I'm not personally interested in seeing the council pursue such thing unless it's tied to action, which then leads to this other category that's labeled more revolutionary. And frankly, that's going to, at some stage, require us to accept that while we have a law that's written about MSY as if it's a non-stationary value on a species-by-species basis, which we can estimate, the reality is, and you can read this in any scientific literature, including most recently the NRC report on rebuilding, the reality is it's a very dynamic concept. It's an ecosystem concept. And so that's going to be the challenge as to how far we want to actually pursue an ecosystem-based fisheries management that's scientifically based. Thank you.
Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll start out by saying that like Dr. Sisson-Line, I share the concern about going down a path that would just generate a bunch of documents that don't really have any meaning. In terms of application. And so our process, we are now several years into this discussion, not into the development of the ecosystem approach to fisheries management, but in terms of our engagement with our SSC and trying to find a pathway forward to make progress on better incorporating ecological considerations into our fisheries management, our decision making. And so our discussion started in detail with our SSC, and then eventually we decided to pursue the development of an ecosystem approach to fisheries management guidance document, modeled somewhat after what the Pacific Council had done. If there's an analog, it was probably at least conceptually most along those lines. But what we envision now is an approach that I would describe as relatively incremental, much more evolutionary than revolutionary. Originally some of the discussions that we heard were really calls for area-based type management, considering the ecological production units off the Northeast. And, I think in the short to medium term, it's unlikely that we'll try to move in that direction because it seems to me that we have a pretty strong mismatch between the political boundaries and the biophysical ecosystem boundaries. And while it'd be nice to be able to reconcile those, the reality is that I think it'd be really a massive challenge for us to deal with that. If you think about the fisheries that we manage jointly, for example, with the ASMFC, we have a lot of state-by-state managed fisheries. We have state-by-state quota allocations. And if we were to try to evolve that into an area-based management system lined up with the marine ecosystems, I think we would have some significant institutional challenges. So we are focusing right now on a more incremental strategy. And the methods that we're using to develop the guidance document, we're going through a process of building up background information and expertise through a series of workshops. So we had one workshop last year on the management of forage fisheries. We've had two workshops this year on climate science, and then a follow-up workshop on climate change related to fisheries management and the governance issues that come out of that. We hosted that on a coastwide basis. A number of you all and the ASMFC participated in that together with our neighbors in the South Atlantic to really highlight some of the concerns that we might have and issues related to coordination as we go forward. But we are moving through the process, and while the development of the EAFM last year was relatively slow in terms of the pace, I anticipate that that'll pick up considerably through the end of this year and through next year. And we're proposing to follow these workshops with the development of white papers. We've already put together an ecosystem approach to fisheries management working group that's being supported by the Science Center as well. And so as we go through this, the working group is going to work on the development of a draft EAFM document, but they'll also be aiding in the development of these white papers. And so the first white paper that we consider will be in August. That'll be a draft on a forage fisheries protocol. And so it'll be done in a modular way. And then the next policy paper would be on climate change, and then eventually we'd have a workshop on species interactions and social and economic objectives as well. So we're going to go through this somewhat incrementally. We're going to consider these different modules that are developed, and then ultimately that culminate in the completion of an EAFM guidance document.
Thank you, Rick. I mean, it's certainly there's a buckload of work has been done, and there's a buckload more to be done. So thank you, Tom and Andy. We'll look forward to your next update. Let's take a very short 5-minute break, and then we're going to go right into highly migratory.